Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jensen Lewis, former Major League Baseball closer. VSiN by the books will join us, and we will do some baseball. We will go division by division, break down the odds for each one, try to find a best bet for each one, and talk a little baseball. I'll get his thoughts on the Super Bowl as well. But as I mentioned on Sunday, when the championship games end on Sunday, between then and the Super Bowl, we got seven shows. I'm not going to do all seven, just all Super Bowl all the time. Got to mix it up a little. I will give some thoughts here on a bet I like. I believe I mentioned it Sunday. I'll reiterate it here, but we will talk some baseball with Jensen coming up and get his thoughts on the Super Bowl, but mostly baseball and just some little mix and match here to open things up. First off, Belichick not getting the Hall of Fame is just the most ridiculous thing ever. I know you have writers saying maybe he'll come back to the NFL. Maybe that's a reason they held it against him. Whatever's going on at UNC, he was never friendly with the media, so people want to stick it to Belichick. I mean, if you're voting, if you get a chance to vote for the Hall of Fame and you're voting no on Bill Belichick, I mean, what are we doing? Just completely ridiculous. But I want to start reaction to the reaction because – yeah, I did the show as soon as the games ended, as soon as Rams-Seahawks ended on Sunday. Didn't really get a chance to, you know, read the room, get a temperature of what people were thinking and saying after the fact. I knew once Denver lost the game 10-7 and Peyton passed on the field goal, and some of it was going around Sunday after the game on Twitter and just, you know, through text and stuff. I knew Peyton would get criticized, second-guessed. I'm shocked. And maybe I shouldn't be. I'm shocked the just onslaught it's been at people. Oh, dumbest thing you could ever do. How could he do that? It was obvious you kicked the field goal. And I wasn't opposed to kicking the field goal. I thought, you know what, 60-40, probably go for it. It's only a yard, and it's kind of a macho cliche, but if you can't get a yard, why even play the game? I think there's actually some truth to that. But this idea that this was like the dumbest decision ever, I don't buy it. I thought it was like a 50-50 call. I'd say even 60-40 going for it. You can make the case, well, if he knew the weather, he should have kicked it, and I buy that. If he knew the weather, he probably should have kicked it. But the one thing I've heard a lot, and this is just, I totally disagree with this, Denver's got a great defense, so you have to kick, which, I mean, you can make the case. If you got a great defense, that's even more of a reason. Just go for the throat, try and go up 14-0 and basically end the game. But this idea, Denver's got a great defense. They play great defense on Sunday, but they give up 30 points to the Bills. They gave up 34 to the Jags, both those at home. That's all within the last month. The other two games, they gave up 13 to the Chiefs, and Oladokun on Christmas night. You throw that game out, and then they gave up 3 to the Chargers backups the final game of the season. So you throw out the games against the Chargers backups, and you throw away the games basically against the Chiefs backups. In the last month, they've played two games, two real games, both at home. They gave up 34 to Jacksonville. They gave up 30 to Buffalo, and they should have given up more to Buffalo. So this idea that this is some, like, you know, the 2000 Ravens or something. I mean, give me a break. They're a good defense, but they have not played great defense recently. They gave up 449 yards to the Bills, and the Bills left points on the board. Bills turned the ball over. Cook fumbled, up 7-3 in pretty deep in Denver territory. I mean, this is not some like all-time great defense. They're a good defense, and they played really good defense on Sunday. But this idea in Denver, what unbelievable. You got this great defense. It's not a great defense. And the other thing too is Patriots fans are using this Broncos defense as a way to spin it towards May playing well. And it's funny, I never rooted against Belichick or Brady. I actually rooted for them. It's whether I bet on them or I just liked rooting for them. I was never anti-Patriot, even though I'm not a Patriot fan. Boy, I'm starting to get sick of him. This idea that May has played well, which he hasn't, or this idea that the schedule, you know, hasn't been easy, which it has been. They're trying to tell you 2 + 2 = 5. Enough of the gaslighting, as the kids call it. And that's what the other thing people are trying to spin it as. Well, May was going up against these great defenses, and he was playing in a blizzard. He had 40 yards passing at halftime. There wasn't a drop of snow in sight at half in the first half, and he threw for 40 yards. So let's all calm down about Denver having a great defense. Let's all calm down about May playing great against these, against these top defenses. I think a lot of that has been overblown, and I think way too much was overblown with Sean Payton not going for it again. I prefer the quarterback sneak. If you're going to tell me you're going to throw some pass play, and I'm usually an aggressive guy, just kick it. If you're going to sneak it, the sneak is really hard to stop. But I talked about all this on Sunday. The one bet I like, the one bet I've made that really stands out to me. I'm surprised there's as much of a gap between Seattle, who's a 4.5 point favorite. There were some fives that have I think slowly started to disappear. Minus 210, minus anywhere from minus 200 to minus 220 on the money line. I'm shocked you can get Darnold plus 130 for MVP. I mean, we know there's a path where, and JVT was on Sunday and said, well, JSN could win it, the receiver. That was a funny clip. I retweeted Mad Dog trying to say Smith and Jigba a couple different times. It's just a classic clip, classic Mad Dog. I mean, there's a path, obviously. There's always a path. Somebody on defense scores two touchdowns. You have a Von Miller-type performance where somebody gets a defensive touchdown and a couple sacks, and they win it on defense. Last time the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, the only time they won the Super Bowl against Denver, it was a defensive player, and it was a game. That was a weird one because it was such a blowout, but Wilson didn't have the great stats, and you could have given it to a bunch of different guys. You could have made a case for three or four guys, and they end up giving it to Malcolm Smith. But this is, for the most part, a quarterback award. The last 3 years, it's gone to a quarterback, 7 of the last 9 and 12 of the last 16. And so much of this is the story, the narrative, and these writers, everyone seems to like Darnold, seems like a good guy, friendly with the media. The story of drafted high by the Jets. He's on his fifth team. Yeah, fifth team. Jets, Panthers, 49ers, Vikings, and now the Seahawks. He's on his fifth team. Reclamation project, all of those things. If they win, and here's the other thing, too. The most likely guy to get it behind him is Smith and Jigba, the receiver. He has a monster game. Well, if he has a monster game, chances are Darnold has a pretty good game. I think Darnold at plus money is a pretty good bet, and there's always a chance. You win the game with Seattle and Darnold doesn't get it, and you feel like you talk to yourself, you turned a winner into a loser. I get that. So if you really like Seattle, maybe you do half of it on Seattle and half of it on Darnold, but I do think there's a lot of value in Darnold plus 130. And we talked about this on other shows, and other shows have talked about this. I know on a numbers game Monday with Gil Alexander, he talked about it. And I think Kelly was the one to bring it up. And it's a good one to keep in mind. Overs early, unders late. It's the Super Bowl. People want to bet the popular ones over. May rushing yards over. Smith and Jigba over. Darnold over. Both the quarterbacks. So people just want to bet overs. You're going to get a lot of overs, a lot of over money. So if you just put the overs in your pocket now, you'll get a lot of middles. You'll get a lot of these markets that move by 5, 6, 7 yards, and you can set up a nice middle, if nothing else. And they don't always move your way, but I would imagine these slowly drip up. The popular ones, Walker over. I mean, I think people will, it's as recreational of an event you're going to get, where people just want to sit down and at their Super Bowl party, bet the overs, root for overs, root for points, root for big performances. Like you got Seattle versus LA, where, Nacua going off and Smith and Jigba going off. People want to root for that stuff, so they bet accordingly. So I think that getting the overs in now, and if you like unders, just wait. And I do think you can set up some middles with that. But I do think there's some value on Darnold at a plus price. Some coaching changes. Boy, how about the Jets firing their offensive coordinator 3 weeks after the season started, and they keep their head coach? First off, all the good offensive coordinator candidates are now taken up or now go elsewhere. If you're going to clean house with the coaching staff, why not just fire the head coach? That was a strange one, as they fire their offensive coordinator. The Jets here, and it's just very strange to fire both coordinators and just get rid of everybody, but keep your head coach, who just looked completely lost. But maybe the Jets, not just maybe, I think that you could say with some certainty the Jets are just completely lost themselves. Daboll lands his offensive coordinator with the Titans. So you have both former New York coaches in Tennessee, Salah, who coached the Jets all those years, and Daboll, who coached the Giants all those years, and they overlapped. Now they are in Tennessee. They actually make for a pretty good duo in Tennessee. I don't know how Salah will be the second time around, but sometimes these guys can learn from the first time. And there's a handful of these guys that are just meant to be coordinators, and there are a handful of these guys that just learn from their experience. And, sometimes all people can relate to. You get a job, you might have been ready, you had no experience. It doesn't go great, but then you learn from what you did wrong, and you get some time to think about what you do differently next time, and Salah ends up, or whoever ends up being a good coach. I think that's possible, and he's got a strong offensive guy to coach Ward. So maybe the Titans, they got to get some players in there, but maybe the Titans did well with that coaching scenario. McCarthy gets hired by the Steelers. JVT brought this point up. Jonathan Von Tobel, I should have asked him about it Sunday. It was a good point, and I've heard this circulate, and I agree with it to some extent. Giants fans are just throwing parades, throwing champagne around the fact that they signed Harbaugh to be their coach, John Harbaugh. Meanwhile, McCarthy goes to the Steelers and signs with the Steelers, and everyone's like, oh, what a stupid move. And you look at their resumes, they both won a Super Bowl. They both won a Super Bowl a long time ago. They both had ups and downs. Harbaugh's recent years have been a little bit better. It is funny, though, the perception of, you would think one guy's won three or four Super Bowls and the other guy's just an idiot. Where they both won one. Neither one made a second one. And a lot of the career numbers are similar in terms of that. That being said, I know you want to go opposite. You had Tomlin. You want to go. He had all these years of defense, and teams like to do this when things get stale, and who knows if Tomlin wanted to come back, if they would have let him, if you hear some of those rumors, who knows. But teams want to go opposite. We had a defensive guy, let's go offense. We had a disciplinarian, let's go with a loosey, kind of a player's coach. I don't mind the idea of bringing in McCarthy to coach the team, but if you're going to pair Rodgers, I mean, what direction are you going in? I know there's not a perfect solution, a perfect answer at quarterback. But like, where are you going? What is the plan to bring in a 43-year-old Aaron Rodgers to be your quarterback? And McCarthy was asked about it. He goes, well, why wouldn't I want Rodgers? Of course, I guess you can make the case, you know what, he's going to say all of those things just in case he gets stuck with Rodgers. And then he's not put in an awkward situation. And deep down, he probably doesn't want him. And I would think Rodgers, at this point of his career, with the way the season ended, I know they won the division, but completely overmatched against the Texans. I mean, what? Why would it look any different? Why would it look any better a year later? He's had a great career. He's an all-time great. He probably should have won more than one for how good he was. Won a million MVPs. He's, to me, an all-time great quarterback. Sad that he only made one Super Bowl, won one Super Bowl, but I would think it's time to move on for Rodgers. I'd be shocked, especially you're in Pittsburgh. You're playing a lot of Cleveland and Cincinnati and Baltimore. Those are all outdoors, cold weather. As the season goes on, I mean, maybe his arm looks okay September, October, but you're really going to get 5-6 months out of Rodgers. That's hard to believe that would be the pairing, that they'd go McCarthy and Rodgers. So, you know, I haven't talked too much about these coaching moves. Harbaugh, you know, solid move. You can't argue with it. I think credibility, you know, high floor, adult in the room, all of those things apply. All of those little cliches, I think, do apply. But I talked about this when the Steelers got buried by the Texans a few weeks ago. We watched that crappy Steeler team on Monday, that Monday night playoff game against Houston. Couldn't do anything. Couldn't move the ball. Boring as hell to watch, like watching paint dry. And you think to yourself, Harbaugh, who these teams are tripping over themselves to hire, just got swept by that team. So I think people can relax a little bit with this guy's the savior. I know there's just a lack of stability with the Giants that you think Harbaugh might fix that, but keep in mind that that guy got swept by the Steelers, and his penchant for blowing leads. You know, he didn't win anything with Lamar. You could say some of that was on Lamar, but I can't argue with the hire. I also don't think it's a home run. Remember, nobody has ever won a Super Bowl with one team, gone to another team and won a Super Bowl. So he would be the first. That being said, they got a good team. I think they got a pretty good team. I know they're actually taking some money in the futures market, which it's obviously a little optimistic at 80-1 to think they could win the whole thing. Maybe a little bit more than a little optimistic, but you know what, people, just like the NFL is a copycat league, bettors are copycats, and people saw what happened with the Patriots and the Seahawks and both these teams that were, you know, 60-1 and 80-1 and missed the playoffs the previous year and said, hey, why not take a shot on the Giants? They're going, I think, in the right direction. Another team where you're worried about, you know, upstairs and just the culture, the ownership on down, and just what goes on in that building day to day. But you know, you look at the roster with Dart, with Scadabo, with Neighbors. If you can just patch up the offensive line, it feels like that offensive line has been an issue for a decade. You got some pass rushers. I know they're bad against the run, but you get another high pick in the draft. I wouldn't be surprised. That's a tough division. Philly's still got a good roster. You got Dak and you got JD Daniels, as you know, as long as he can stay on the field. But the Giants making a leap to being a wild card team would not shock me. Would you be shocked if they won 10 games next year? I wouldn't. They were in a lot of these games last year, too, where, you know, they blew the Cowboys game. They blew the Bears. I mean, they had a million. The Broncos game, they had a million of these games that they could have won that they didn't. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but not to the extreme with the Giants. They were really, you know, unfortunate in terms of close late-game luck. And maybe a year later, different draft class, different coach. Although, you know, like I said, Harbaugh's had a habit of blowing these leads himself. But I understand the optimism for the Giants. Next year's Super Bowl odds are up. Seahawks and Rams both plus 950. The Bills are 10-1, and that's another one. Bills hire Joe Brady, so they promote from within. I didn't understand this idea that people were oh, how could you do this to McDermott? He makes the playoffs. I can make the freaking playoffs with Allen. Allen's one of the great quarterbacks. You could say he's, you know, spotty with the ball and the playoffs, all this stuff. And that was a bad performance against Denver. It really was. But, I mean, as long as he's healthy, your floor is like 11, 12-plus wins. I mean, McDermott making the playoffs, Josh Allen's not an accomplishment. You know, once in a while you win a playoff game or two, or you win some here or there, but I would have fired McDermott after the 13-second fiasco against Kansas City. So I didn't understand the pearl-clutching, people just whining that McDermott got a raw deal or whatever. I didn't buy that at all. But the Bills are 10-1. Rams and Seahawks are co-favorites at plus 950. Patriots are 12-1. I would not bet that at all. Eagles 13-1, Lions 13-1, Packers and Ravens 14-1. So you got a bunch of teams bunched up. Chargers 15-1. I think that they could be very live if they get their offensive lineman back. How often do you get the Chiefs at 15-1? You're getting them now. So will Mahomes start opening day? Will he be ready? That's obviously something to consider. But Chiefs at 15-1 will be intriguing to a lot of people. 49ers 16, Broncos 18-1, Texans 19-1. So you have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 teams. And throw the Jags in at 20-1. You've got 14 teams. You basically almost got half the league here. That's 20-1 or shorter, which is telling you we're not getting burned on long shots anymore. It's a league filled with parity. The Chiefs are really good, but Mahomes being hurt neutralizes things. They are not going to hang big numbers. Giants 80-1, Steelers 60-1, Vikings 55-1. The longest shots are Miami and Arizona 200-1. So even though they're small bets, these books, they see long shots come through and said, you know what, not anymore. We're just going to lower everybody's numbers. We're going to put everyone towards the middle. So you got 14 teams 20-1 or shorter for next year, which is interesting. But enough football. Let's talk some baseball. We haven't talked a lot of baseball. Let's go division by division. Let's get some best bets with Jensen Lewis. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, it is cold, it is snowy. Let's warm up a little bit. Just thinking about baseball, I think, makes everybody a little bit warmer. It is Jensen Lewis, former Major League closer, VSiN by the books. He joins us now. Jensen, are you ready to talk a little baseball? How's it going? Thanks for coming on.
You bet, buddy. We cannot start soon enough. Pitchers and catchers here in just a handful of weeks, so excited to get it going. And boy, another wide-open American League, I think, this year. And hey, who can run down the Dodgers to try and prevent a three-peat as well?
And when you're in the content business like we are, I love the Super Bowl, I love talking about it. You got to pace yourself a little. You can't go just balls to the wall 100 miles an hour on the same game for 2 weeks. By next Wednesday or Thursday, you're just going to be exhausted talking about this game, thinking about this game. So figure mix it up a little. We'll do a little baseball. We'll go division by division. Here's the exercise. I give you a $100 free bet on every division, and you tell me where the value is. We'll start with the American League East. Even though the Yankees did not win the division, did not go to the World Series like the Blue Jays. Yankees are the short shot, plus 160. Blue Jays, plus 250. Red Sox, 3-1. Orioles, 5-1. The Rays are at 30-1. Jensen, what is the bet here, if anything?
Boy, love the Red Sox rotation adds this offseason. And I really feel they're going to kind of be the Seattle of, you know, the American League East there. Do they have enough offense at the bottom of their lineup? That concerns me. The value for me would be on the Orioles, and I absolutely love where they're at right now. Again, as of doing this show with you, no Framber Valdez just yet, but my God, he's just going to fall into their lap, it feels like, with where the Mets went out and made the trade for Freddie Peralta. It would be a no-brainer to me. You put Framber with potentially a bounce back with Kyle Bradish, obviously with what Trevor Rogers did last year. You know, can Zach Eflin kind of fill in the bottom of that rotation? And then just getting Pete Alonso in the middle with Gunnar Henderson. I think they have a lengthened lineup. They got a lot of guys that are primed for a bounce back. To me, you give me a free $100 bet, I'd put it on the Orioles to win the East.
I'm with you. That's the team that jumped out to me. It wasn't that long ago. The Soto Judge Yankees 2 years ago, I mean, that was a race down to the wire. The Yankees eventually pulled away, I want to say the last month or so, last couple of weeks. But those teams were back and forth, nip and tuck, all-star break really throughout the year. And that's an Orioles team where, I mean, those young guys have just gotten a little bit older, more mature. I know it was a disaster year last year, and Rushman has regressed. But you had Alonso, you had a little experience for that group. You throw in Rodgers, I'm with you. There is some value there on Baltimore at 5-1. How about the Central here? You're familiar with this division. Tigers, the short shot, as you'd expect, plus 130. Royals, plus 210. Guardians, 3-1. Twins, 10-1. The White Sox at 50-1. I feel like the White Sox are a year. I can't get to them winning the division if you just told me, hey, I got a free bet, a pizza bet. I threw it on the White Sox. I actually wouldn't hate a bet on the White Sox, but it does feel like, I don't know, it's probably a year early, a year away. What are your overall thoughts on this division?
I would agree. A lot more exciting to watch the White Sox, especially with their young core, Colson Montgomery in there and Kyle Teal and a lot of guys that I think are going to make bigger strides. I would look at Shane Smith, too, as a little bit of a dark horse there in the Cy Young market, because I think he's really going to turn some heads. Not to say I would jump on him just yet, but if you're looking for someone who is going to be very under the radar, he certainly will be for the White Sox. The easy answer is the Royals to put that on. And I think, to be honest, when you look at the injuries sustained in that rotation last year, if Cole Reagans did not go down early, I think they're at a head of steam, knowing that the veteran guys they can roll out there, plus the revamp back into the bullpen. Carlos Estevez is one of the top 10 relievers in all of baseball. If you go back and look statistically, he would be a guy that I think can really help anchor what should be a pretty solid bullpen. The thing with the Royals last year, Will, it was like watching the Blue Jays. Their offense could not score to save their life in the first two and a half months of the season. If they were league average at all, I think they keep pace with the Detroit Tigers, who are just exponentially good and ran away and tried to hide from the rest of the division. I can't get there with Cleveland offensively because they've literally done absolutely nothing to help the offense this offseason. That's a lot to bank on with a lot of young, unproven bats outside of Jose Ramirez and Steven Kwan. Not going to go there, even though their pitching staff, top to bottom, should be very good. You're asking me to win a lot of low-scoring games. Not the ideal way to do business over a six-month regular season. The Twins are the complete wild card for me because the front end of the rotation is really damn good. Back end of the bullpen is okay. What do you get out of the lineup? If Buxton and Royce Lewis, if you can tell me today that I get at least 135 games from Buxton and Lewis, you're asking me that? Okay, but I'm with you. You can't bank on that. And then you're asking the rest of that offense to be able to help out. Derek Shelton, great friend, my hitting coach, my rookie year in Cleveland. He takes back over the managerial spot there for Rocco Baldelli. I think it's a transition year offensively for them. Can they get over 500? Yeah, if everyone stays healthy on the pitching side. But, man, that's a tough, tough row to hoe. So I would put it on the Royals to win the Central.
White Sox at 65.5 for an over-under. It might, like I said, it might be a little ambitious to think they're going to win the division. 65.5, to me, that's an over.
I agree.
They were feisty last year. I mean, it was 2 years ago. They were just basically the worst team of all time. I think they ended up breaking that record. Lost a million games. But like you said, Smith, the bring-up, who was Hagen Smith, the big lefty, is coming at some point. Now, you never know. Does management really want to win? Do you want to kick the can down the road another year? But the guys they got for Crochet are pretty good. I'm going to probably bet that over. Would you agree with that? Or you think
100%. Yep. Yeah. And remember, they just went out and spent money, big money, on Sir Anthony Dominguez to come in to be their closer. Jordan Leisure, Grant Taylor, probably the best setup man you've never heard of. They got a pretty nice little back three there to close out some games. I would say that when you got Teal, Colson Montgomery, the young guy, and I use that lightly there, 26-year-old Munetaka Murakami, might be a nice little play for rookie of the year in the American League. Again, a guy that if he hits anywhere close to 25 home runs, he's going to be right in the thick of things for that race as well.
Yeah, and Smith was a guy I liked to play last year, a lot of under hits allowed because they didn't give him that much rope. He would sometimes be inefficient with his pitch count, but he had good stuff, so he wouldn't give the hits. So a lot of his stat lines were like, you know, 5 innings, 3 hits, they get him out of there, and he would cash it like under 4.5. He didn't have that much rope, which those are fun markets to look at. The West. Another interesting division. You figure the Mariners are the short shot, which they are, plus 115. Astros always in the mix, even though they kind of fell apart last year, plus 190. Rangers, who just trade for Mackenzie Gore, that's a really nice top of the rotation. Speaking of guys, if you can stay healthy, if you could keep DeGrom, Eovaldi, Gore, boy, that's a hell of a trio. Athletics at 16-1, that's another team. I like them. I don't know if they could win the division. And then the Angels at 40-1. Good luck. Thanks for coming. Probably not going to happen. What's the bet to be made there?
Bet to me is the Rangers. They're in all-in mode right now with that trade. You don't trade five prospects and of the ilk of talent that they did without saying chips to the middle. And you're really banking here on a healthy Jacob deGrom and Nathan Eovaldi. And when they were healthy last year, oh boy, I don't know if you were one to stare down the barrel of that 1-2 punch in a wild card series, let alone a divisional setup. I think the big trade of sending Marcus Semien out, bringing Brandon Nimmo in, is going to inflect a lot of life. He's a great personality to add in there. I think you bank on some bounce backs from Wyatt Langford, Evan Carter. You need the youngsters to be able to stay healthy and be able to produce. Corey Seager, I think, is going to get his when he's healthy. But to me, it's Langford, it's Seager, it's Carter. They've got to do the heavy lifting with Nimmo on the offensive side. Back into the bullpen is like first day of school. Everyone's going to wear a name tag, introduce themselves. There's a lot of turnover there. But remember, this was a bullpen last year that had the fifth best ERA. And this was a rotation that had the best ERA as far as starting staffs go. So the pitching has been there. Chris Young, their president of baseball operations, has been so good about knowing where to go get guys for low cost and having them be really high ROI, especially on the pitching side. I think the Rangers are the value play. One of my favorite totals would be the Athletics over. That lineup is going to be so good. It is going to be auto betting overs in Sacramento because of where those totals will be in April. Books didn't really catch up to it early last year. We were able to exploit that a lot. I think they may up it to 8.5s, 9s to start the year, but I don't even know if that park is going to hold Kurtz and Langeliers and Rooker. I mean, this is a really, really vaunted lineup, and it might be the second best lineup in that division when it's all said and done.
Kurtz has a little, I mean, you don't want to compare anybody to Judge. There, I mean, he is that good. You watch just his swing, the way he stays behind the ball, the power to all fields. He's not just a power hitter. He's a polished hitter. My goodness. He's probably going to win an MVP, if not multiple, which is strong words to say about anybody. It's such a hard award to win. Not that he's going to win it this year, but my goodness, he is like a Hall of Fame level hitter.
Going to be a lot of fun. I would say, too, if you're looking for a kind of the anti-Judge, if any, almost a Scotty Scheffler, a winner without, it would be Nick Kurtz. I think he finishes top three in the MVP this year.
No shot. Don't have enough pitching to win a division. Do you think they can make the playoffs?
Gosh, that's the crazy part, right? So it's Severino, it's Springs, Luis Morales, Jacob Lopez.
Lopez was good last year. Yeah, yes. Lopez was solid.
Would love to see what his props are when they officially come out. That might be some overs there. Another young kid that really burst on the scene, great command, is going to give you a chance to win. Really anxious to see. He was 10.97 strikeouts per nine last year. I think he's got a great shot to be one of those swing and miss candidates again in 2026.
Without the fastball, too. He's a little bit of a throwback where, back to when you played, back to when we were younger, where you could kind of dominate throwing 92. You don't see a lot of that reef. You don't see anybody throwing 92 unless it's like their changeup or their slider. I mean, he's throwing 91, 92 and getting funky swings and misses. There's a lot of deception. There's a lot of changing speed. There's just a lot of pitchability, as they call it.
I would agree. So I think the Athletics over win total, that one is an easy one to get behind. If they could stay healthy in that rotation, look out. That's not a team you're going to want to see come to town, especially with that lineup.
NL East loaded division, Phillies plus 160. I'm surprised. I thought the Mets should be the short shot here. I don't know Wheeler. That's a tricky injury. Maybe you know more about it. Are you 100% sure he's going to come back and be the Wheeler that was basically, Cy Young or Cy Young runner-up? I'm not positive. Mets with that everyday lineup, I like them plus 175, but the Braves are 2-1. Could obviously see them bouncing back. Marlins, another good, young, exciting team on the rise, but in that division, no shot, 40-1 in the Nationals. There's a 1 and then a bunch of zeros. I think that's 100-1. You could add a couple more zeros. They're not winning the division. Do you have any thoughts on where you'd go with this division?
So the Phillies, let's start with Zach Wheeler, the thoracic outlet syndrome or depression surgery, I should say. You can't bank on it. So if he comes back and he's able to get to where even where ever close he was from last year. Remember, that was a Cy Young campaign that he was on with what Paul Skenes did, too. It was going to be him and Skenes and his teammate Christopher Sanchez neck and neck down the stretch. But, yeah, you don't bank on getting anything from him. If he does come back, it's all a bonus. I think Christopher Sanchez has got everything it takes to be a staff ace and be one of the best in baseball. Problem there with the rest of the rotation. Can you get Jesus Luzardo to get anywhere close to the great season? It's a career year you got from Luzardo last year. He's going to have to elevate himself to a true number two. Aaron Nola on his way out, kind of the downside here of a career. He has been Mr. Philly here in the modern era, and all his contributions from being the leader of this rotation for so long, you can kind of just tell we're towards the tail end of a brilliant career. I don't know how much you want to buy into Taiwan Walker there. I think Andrew Painter is going to be solid, but as we know with any rookie pitcher, you're going to have to adapt once the league adapts to you. Pretty much running it back here. You got Schwarber back, big re-signing there. You get JT Realmuto, which I think might be the key for them because of not only what he does in managing the staff, but it helps lengthen that lineup. They've got questions to answer in center field. Justin Crawford, who's a non-roster invite, might get a shot to win the everyday job. Don't know how much of an upgrade Adolis Garcia is over Nick Castellanos, even defensively out in right field, but it is what it is. I think last year we thought it was last dance, but I don't think that's the case here with what they've got back. They may have the sneakiest bullpen as far as how dominant they can be and how deep they can be with Duran. Jose Alvarado comes back off of PED suspension. Brad Keller is a great signing for them from the Cubs. He was so critical to Chicago's success last year. That means you can push Ryan Kirkering down to maybe the first out of the pen in the sixth inning, maybe the seventh inning. They're going to be pretty vaunted as far as swing and miss there. Atlanta would be my pick, and it's a real risky one. But if you're looking for if the Spencers, the law firm of Schwellenbach and Strider can stay healthy along with the Sage veteran and Chris Sale, I like Reynaldo Lopez bouncing back. Getting Robert Suarez, go ahead and pick your poison back into that bullpen. Raisel Iglesias and Suarez to finish games out. And then it's the usual suspects here. Can you have healthy years from Ronald Acuna Jr., from Austin Riley? Drake Baldwin was amazing, winning Rookie of the Year last year. If you force me into it, I'll take Atlanta in what should be a very crowded top of the National League East.
What the hell happened to Strider last year? 4.93 expected ERA.
Yeah. I mean, again, remember the dip in velocity both for Schwellenbach and Strider. They both had to deal with the injury issues, and that's something to monitor very early. You would have to believe that Walt Weiss and company are going to be very mindful of that. Might be a great spot for unders on outs recorded from both those guys. They've got designs on a long, long run here, not only through the regular season. So that might be a way to exploit Atlanta pitching, especially in April.
Do you think Strider bounces back?
I hope he does, because when he's right, it's just a freight train, man. And that's a swing and miss that you want to get yourself behind. It's just going to be one of those wait and see approaches for me personally. I think I got to see him out of the gate 4 or 5 times through the rotation to really get a sense of what we can expect from him early on.
And it does happen in baseball. It's sad to say, but you go through the years, you'll have guys that are just dominant for a year or two, 3 years. They get hurt. They're never the same. And you look back and wow, remember that guy used to be Ubaldo Jimenez. You might've still been agreed in the league when he was playing unbelievable sub one ERA at the All-Star break 1 year. And then it's just like, it doesn't last. It doesn't sustain. It's hard for whatever reason. You get that with some of these guys. Do you think Miami can be a playoff team? Played pretty well end of the season. Boy, if Alcantara, I think we and I text about this, if Alcantara was just the Sandy of old, boy, that probably would have been a playoff team. He killed them. The rest of their pitching was really good. They do trade Cabrera. They're always trying to balance, playing for tomorrow with playing for now. What do you think Miami will be good?
I kind of like their rotation. Again, you're looking at Alcantara. Is he the guy that you saw at the end of the year? Because remember, they decided, and he was actually pitching better into the trade deadline. They could have had a chance to deal him. They decided against it. I think it's going to be a good omen for them. Getting also Yuri Perez back. Max Meyer, remember, they've got a couple of stud prospects here that have had to go through injury issues. Braxton Garrett, their young left-hander, very good guy. And Jansen Junk actually made their rotation last year as a non-roster invitee. So that's also something to think about. They're pretty deep in the rotation. Pete Fairbanks, awesome signing for them to fill that closing role. You've got a little bit of an ability with the back end of that bullpen to generate some swing and miss. They had issues last year trying to close out some games, but it's not as bad as you think it might be. I think the Xavier Edwards and the Kyle Stowers dynamic, along with Agustin Ramirez, that's a pretty solid 2-3-4 that not a lot of people will be able to remember was pretty good. This was a team last year that finished the year really strongly. If you remember the last series of the year, they played like it's a playoff series against the Mets. Remember, the Mets had to come in there and try and win the series to get into the playoffs, and it was a postseason-type feel for Clayton McCullough and that group. Hats off to them. They had nothing to play for except to be spoilers. They played it like they had a postseason spot on the line. Love Stowers. Baltimore is regretting and then some. That trade and the July 24 deadline, but I think he is going to be a force to be reckoned with again here in 2026.
Is that the one that got him Rodgers, though?
Yeah, it is. But again, that's you think that, about...
That's not as bad because Rodgers is blossomed, but I know.
Unless Kyle Stowers turns into, you know, a 30-plus home run guy year in and year out, Rodgers better be front of the rotation stuff. Otherwise, they're going to rue the day that they traded him away.
If Rodgers continues to do what he did last year, you could live with it. Man, I mean, sometimes these trades happen where both sides are happy, both sides win, but Rodgers got to stay healthy, and Rodgers has to do what he was doing last year. That's a good point. I had forgotten about that trade. This is a fun division. Cubs plus 125, the NL Central. Brewers plus 190. These teams both met in the playoffs last year. Reds also made the playoffs 4-1. The Pirates at 11-1 have a lot of pitching. Can you get enough around Skeens to be a sleeper? And then the Cardinals at 25-1. I mean, I want to say Pirates. I don't know if I could quite get there. There's a lot of these teams, you know, Pirates, A's, White Sox. It's like probably a year away. You're probably stretching it to thinking get it done. I'd probably go with the Reds at 4-1. What do you say?
Say it with me. The Pirates have a top five rotation in Major League Baseball. They have a bottom five offense in Major League. They're dead last in runs scored last year, so it can't get any worse. Sneaky good trade getting Brandon Lau in the three-team deal with Houston, with Tampa, and with Pittsburgh all involved there. Signing Ryan O'Hearn, I know they tried to go out and also, at least on paper, make the offer they did to Kyle Schwarber. Tip of the cap, but we knew that was never happening. Jake Mangum, nice lineup lengthener. Going to be fantastic on the base paths. High bat-to-ball quality there. They have a longer lineup this year. I think they're going to be in a lot more games, just knowing that their rotation with Skeens and Keller, Braxton Ashcraft, Bubba Chandler, they're going to be great. Back into their bullpen, Gregory Soto comes over from the Mets and signs to be the setup guy in front of Dennis Santana. They get Mason Montgomery also in the deal with the Rays, so they're much better on paper. This is probably the chalk division for me. I would go with the Cubs because if not now, when are they going to do it? I really feel with the Bregman signing, you saw what he did with the Boston Red Sox. He made everyone around him better. He's only going to augment. I think it's addition by subtraction, not giving Kyle Tucker all the money there in Chicago and being able to spread it out. You have Bregman, Michael Bush should be great with them, Hap, Suzuki, PCA, Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, Moises Ballesteros. They got a long lineup. Getting the Cabrera trade too with Miami's great. And think of this, Will. Cade Horton in the second half was as good as any starting pitcher before the injury. If they have a healthy Cade Horton into the wildcard series, it may be a whole different outcome for the Northsiders from last year. We'll never know, but they did augment the rotation, the back end of their bullpen. Wow. Phil Maton, Hunter Harvey, Jacob Webb, Hobie Milner. This might be a team you play. If you don't have the lead after six innings, forget about it, because they're as deep as anybody in the National League. Really love what Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins did, the brain trust there in Chicago. So I'll go the short shot here. I think it's chalk in the Central. I'll take the Cubs to win it.
Dodgers minus 700 to win the NLS. We don't need to. We can just skip over it, right?
We can skip over it, but remember, this was a division where the Padres were within three games.
Boy, they had their chances.
They were within three games for what felt like 3 weeks and could not hit to save their life. I would tell you if I'm hitching a wagon to maybe a team that could upset everything, the San Francisco Giants have a rotation that's capable. Logan Webb, I think, is going to be one of those longer shot Cy Young candidates you could look at outside of, you know, the usual suspects with Skeens and Christopher Sanchez. Robbie Ray, another great, outstanding statistical year last year. Tyler Mahle comes over from Texas. They get Adrian Hauser, who is really good between Tampa and Chicago. Back into their bullpen should be fine. And then it's all about getting Rafi Devers, Willy Adames, and Matt Chapman hitting all at the same time. If you can do that, they just picked up Harrison Bader, which I thought was, it might have been a shrewd move, but it was an expensive one, $20 million over 2 years. Jung Hoo Lee will be fine for them. Elliot Ramos leading off. I think they're sneaky. It's all about what does Tony Vitello do coming from college into the pros, being able to manage in a bigger market. I think they will know a lot about San Francisco early on the day-to-day. Will he mesh with those guys? He's an intense dude. I covered him a lot, doing a lot of college baseball for ESPN. I think the personality meshed with the will and the want to win is going to motivate that group. It's just going to be, as you and I know, It's the day in and day out. It's a marathon, man. You cannot have that intensity every single day. Will he be able to space it out? I think San Francisco very live for a playoff position this year.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was just I was flipping into channels the other day, and Major League was on, the original. And Charlie Sheen is flipping the ball up, and Jake Taylor, Tom Berenger goes, "You got to relax, kid. We got 162 of these."
That's it such is a good so movie. True. It's so true. Hey, don't sleep on the Diamondbacks' top of their lineup, too. They didn't trade Ketel Marte. Geraldo Perdomo coming out party last year. He'll be one of the top shortstops in all of baseball. And obviously, with what Corbin Carroll did, I think if you look for a long shot, or a longer shot, I should say, outside of Ohtani for the MVP market, Corbin Carroll might be a great investment there on the National League side.
One of the great lines, and I'd forgotten how many good lines there are in that movie. Before the first game of the season, Lou Brown gets up in front of the team. He goes, "A lot of people think we'd save everyone a lot of time and effort if we just shot ourselves."
I'm here to waste sports writers' time. Yeah. It's so good, buddy. What a classic.
So good. Was Tucker, you talk to people, you know, in the league, players, former players, people around the game. Was Tucker the last straw here with the Dodgers, where, all right, something's got to change? What was the reaction? Do you think there's any way we avoid a strike?
Well, for people that don't know, and obviously we'll talk about this throughout the year, but their TV deal, you get all the way back to the bankruptcy issues when there's change of ownership for the Dodgers, and however that language got through, that's been the difference maker. The Dodgers are able to keep a boatload more money of rev share because of their TV deal and how it's structured. They're an outlier. They're one of one. That's why they're able to spend the money that they're able to, because it's so much more than what other teams have. Are we headed for a lockout? 99.9%, I think. But is it one where we miss games? I'm not so sure of that. I think it is a negotiating ploy. Why would you telegraph your signal this early if you didn't want to kind of infuse some urgency on the players' union side? Do I think there's benefits to a salary floor and cap? Yes, but I'm also, a Players Association alumni. We didn't fight for over five decades to be able to have no salary cap without there being, very much positives on the player side. So I'm anxious to see how the temperature is when we get to the All-Star break. If it's still as tense as it is right now, Will, then yeah, I think we're in for a long winter for baseball.
Who's winning the Super Bowl?
I want to take the Patriots. What, five straight covers for the last five outright from the dog here? I want to see it. I'm an AFC guy through and through, even though my Browns are not going to see the promised land anytime soon. So I'll stay with the AFC. Give me the Patriots and a shocker over the Seahawks.
Wow. Okay. I mean, it wouldn't be a huge one, 4 or 4.5 points. It's not. We've seen bigger ones. This isn't like 2007 Giants were Pats, but would still be a surprise. What's your go-to game day snacks? Last one. I've been asking guests this. You're watching the Super Bowl. What will be the spread? What will you have in front of you? Food, beverages, take you whatever direction you
want. Yeah, it'll probably be a nice Italian wine. And I'm also, for people that know this dish, kind of a Polish disaster. It's just kind of a meat conglomerate, with a little chip and dip kind of feel to it. So anxious to see it. And hopefully no snow here in Northeast Ohio on Super Sunday.
Jensen, you're the best, man. Where can we find you?
Give me a follow on X at JLew50. That's JLewFifty. And, of course, all the time on weekdays, VSiN by the Books with my man Dave Ross, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll see you there.
All right. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Jensen Lewis. We will be back on Wednesday. See you then.